I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study.
I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today Dr. Timmy Gambine, an archaeologist, a lecturer here at the university, and a guest from abroad, Dr. Nick Mariner, who is a geomorphologist. And I know that they're both working on a project here in Malta at the moment, and I do hope that Dr. Mariner will enlighten us as to exactly what a geomorphologist does for a living. Welcome to you both.
Welcome. Hi. Thanks for having us here.
Dr. Mariner, you are based, I believe, in Aix-en-Provence at the research centre, CNRS, and you sort of work from there. How does that actually work? Do you work on projects and travel the world, or you base yourself there, or how does it work out?
I'm based at a laboratory in Aix-en-Provence, which I started working there in 2008, and we have a number of projects with our team around the Mediterranean, one of which is here in Malta at the moment, which is started a few years ago with a European-funded project called Archeomed, and has moved on to another French-funded project called Paleomed, which will run for the next 3 to 4 years.
And what exactly is it going to be looking for? What are you going to be doing with Paleomed now?
The aim of Paleomed is to study the evolution of the Maltese islands over the course of the Holocene, which is basically the past 10,000 years. So we're going to be taking a number of cores from around Malta, in the Rhea Valley bottoms, so the drowned valley bottoms that have filled with sediment during the course of the past 8,000 years. And by studying these sediment cores, we're going to try to reconstruct the evolution of the Maltese landscape and the vegetation changes during the course of the past 10 to 8,000 years.
How does the choice of where you're going to take the cores from, how does that happen? How does it physically, how do you actually go about doing this?
Well, the actual cores are going to be taken at the end of April, so in a month's time, and Dr. Mariner's visit is specifically aimed at scouting out the best spots to core from. What determines what is the best spot to core from? Well, we know that we need to core in these floodplains, so that already limits our choice to I think between 13 and 15 floodplains between Malta and Gozo. But we need to take the longest possible sample. So again, that limits the choice to the larger floodplains. And there has been prior work in Bulmarat done by myself for my PhD research, and in Marsa by Catherine Fennec for her PhD research. So we've decided to, it's better the devil you know, so we've gone with these same two floodplains. We're going to be taking the course from there. The research done by Dr. Fennec and by myself is there to complement what we will be achieving in the coming months. Added to that, we also took a subsequent core from Bulmarat in 2008 as part of Archeomed, and so there's that added information which came out from that fieldwork.
The core itself, obviously, you go down into the silt. How deep can you go down, or how deep is it useful to go down? And once you've drawn out the core, what actually happens to it after that?
Well, as Dr. Gemin said, in the deepest parts of the valley bottoms, there's probably about 15 to 20 metres of sediment which have accumulated over the past 10,000 years. So by extracting these sediment cores and studying the different layers, we can see how the landscape has evolved. So what are the sorts of tools that we use to study on the cause? Well, there are a number of different tools that can be used. This study is going to focus on marine mollusks, so to look at the evolution of the coastal environment. We're also going to work with a number of pollen specialists, notably Dr. Morteza Jamali, who is also based in Aix-en-Provence. And he's going to study the pollen grains to look at the changes in vegetation during the past 8,000 years.
I seem to remember when discussing Catherine Fenech's work, the core itself was divided into two, and I think part of it went to one researcher and part of it went to another, if I remember rightly. Will that be the same, will you use the same system in this case?
We can the core can be split into a number of subsections, and then each specialist goes away and studies their particular tool, so to speak. And then at the end of the project, we'll bring all the data together and try to reach some more general conclusions. So.
And who else is involved? You mentioned this gentleman from Egypt.
He's based in Aix.
He's based in Aix. But you have other partners. You said the French people are the actual coordinators of the Paleomed project.
Yes.
But I presume you have partners elsewhere.
In Malta, we're working with Dr. Gambin and also Dr. Vella in the Department of Archaeology. There's a second project which is running in parallel with as part of the Paleomed project, which is based in Egypt on the Nile Delta. So it's based in a lagoon just behind the ancient city of Alexandria, and that in a similar vein is looking to understand the evolution of this of the northwestern margin of the Nile Delta during the course of the past 8,000 years.
And this Paleomed project, in actual fact, is a sort of follow on, perhaps, from the previous project, or is it completely different?
It is. It finds its roots. Its roots can be traced back to the EU-funded project called Archaeomed, and one of the biggest benefits of these EU-funded projects is the network that one sets up in the course of the two or 3 years that an EU-funded project runs. There are the immediate benefits which one the immediate fruits which are born within the time frame of the project, but and then there are longer lasting benefits such as the synergies which are formed, and this is a very clear example of one of those synergies and collaborations that is born out of an EU-funded project. So the roots can be traced back to Archaeomed, but it is a totally separate project.
That's an interesting point to make, because very often I have people on this program who talk about their EU projects, and sometimes you get the feeling that they're disappointed at the end of the day, that it's not going to carry on, or they're not going to perhaps find funding to do a follow-up project. But it's important to use the friendships as well, because it's not just a question of finance, is it? It's or academic research. It's also a question of gelling with your colleagues, and therefore being able to sort of pick up and use it. And I think that's very important. Have you found that yourself?
Well, yes, that's exactly why we decided to apply for this Paleomed funding. So to build on the partnerships and friendships that we'd established as part of the European funded Archaeomed project. So that's exactly that. Yeah.
The core itself. I was fascinated when talking previously about your own PhD work. Give us an idea of the sort of thing that you can discover from looking at a core.
Okay, we had a meeting with Dr. Nicholas Vella at the Department of Classics and Archaeology earlier this morning, and he's also very excited about the potential of this project, and so am I from my personal research. So there are two things actually from an archaeological perspective that one can get a better understanding of. One is from a maritime point of view. We now know, it is now established, that many of the floodplains that we see as floodplains today, so places such as Burmarrat and Marsa, were once ancient harbors. So through these cores, we can get a better understanding at the evolution of these harbors. How did these places start off as bays where a ship could enter and anchor and spend the winter, and end up as marshes and then eventually dry land? So these cores give us essential information into understanding the evolution of these bays. Tied to that, one can get a better understanding of the human reaction to that change. So did people pick up sticks and move to a new place? Did they move away from Marsa area to Birgu because of this evolution? So it also helps us with a better understanding to the human reaction to these changes in our harbors. The added information that we're going to be getting this time, and this is what really excited Dr. Vella, is through the pollen studies from two comparative cores, we're going to be able to shed light also on the vegetation and also agricultural practices through time.
And how far back? You mentioned Holocene, which would take us back past 10,000 years. That would go prior to, as we know, the human activity in Malta, and then run right through from the earliest human activity right up to the latest. So it will give you a very good idea, not just of prehistory, but also medieval history as well, if you want one were to go. How far are you going to go in your analysis? Are you going to choose a particular period of time? And if you do, how easy is it to actually select from your core, say, this bit is corresponding to a certain time frame?
Well, the idea was to try to extract the longest cores to get the longest sequence of environmental and human impacts. The cores will be dated using radiocarbon techniques, which will provide calendar ages for the sedimentation rates, and this will be used to chronologically constrain the different periods.
Mm. So. And that nowadays, where is the margin of error for carbon dating of that nature?
It's around 300 to 400 years.
Which, when you're dealing with that far back, doesn't really matter so much if you're dealing with the very earliest times.
It becomes
a bit of a more of a problem when you're dealing with more modern times.
It is a quite substantial margin of error for archaeologists, but there is very little data for the vegetation changes on Malta, so this really is a first step towards...
And it is the first time it's being done, because in the course that I took, I had taken one C14 date. I believe in Dr. Fenech's publication there is one C14 date as well.
I think there are a few more, five or six possibly.
Okay, and there is one from the Archaeomed.
Yes, yeah.
From the Archaeomed. So the fact that we're going to be getting a sequence of dates from two comparative cores, we'd be able to say, okay, so 18, 15 meters down in Marsa, the date is 4000 BC, and we'll be able to see what 15 meters down in Burmarrat, and this is all very exciting. It's the first time that it's being done, especially in this comparative way.
That's wonderful. I love telling people as we're passing Burmarrat, having sort of walked it with you and discussed it with you and heard you talk about it when you've lectured. I love to tell people that over here, you know, the water reached right up to here, and people are really fascinated by that idea. So I think that it is something that is
of interest and can be sort of put across to a general audience, and not just to the specialist as well.
In fact, with regard to the general audience, Dr. Mariner has agreed to give a talk. He has been invited, and he has accepted. He's been invited by the Archaeological Society to give a talk about his work, his generic work, and he has kindly accepted to give a talk, which will be not only open to members of the society, but also to the general public.
And what will you be discussing in that particular talk?
In that particular talk, I'll be discussing my PhD work, which was on the ancient harbours of Lebanon. And I'll particularly focus on three ancient harbours, so the ancient harbours of Tyre, Sidon, and also Beirut.
So there is a bit of a Maltese connection there as well, I suppose, because we imagine that our Phoenician ancestors, if I dare use that word,
yes.
Actually were from Tyre. So.
Exactly, yes. So there is some nice overlap in with that.
What tell us about what you sort of discovered, if you may discoveries, or what you researched when you were actually examining the harbour in Tyre. What sort of things did you come across? What were you looking for, if anything? What hypothesis did you have originally?
Well, ancient travellers to the Near East had long been surprised by the small size of the harbours of the Phoenician coastline. And they found that this didn't really correspond to the images we had of these ancient cities during antiquity. So we basically wanted to relocate the ancient harbours of Lebanon and try to reconstruct their ancient dimensions and how they evolved through time. So once again, we took a number of calls at these three coastal cities and looked to reconstruct how the harbours actually evolved from the Bronze Age through to the medieval period.
And what conclusions did you come to at the end of the day? What was did you feel that they were large enough to have justified this incredible development that the Phoenicians had at a certain period of time?
Well, they were much larger. For example, the ancient northern harbour of Tyre was approximately twice as large as present day, and we also found that the Romans significantly dredged the harbour to ensure that they remained viable during the Roman period, to avoid problems of silting, which reduces the draft depth to accommodate the ships.
What about our own harbours, Timmy? What work needs to be done to uncover them, in the sense of to really get to the bottom of what they're all about?
Well, there are. The one advantage is that the floodplains of Malta are relatively untouched, and some of the sites with the highest archaeological potential lie on these floodplains, which are yet to be discovered, as was found out a few years ago when civil works in Marsa uncovered some substantial and very important port remains in Marsa. I am convinced, but it is an educated guess, that similar structures lay buried in Bur Mararat. So if I had to be asked, like I have just been asked, what needs to be done, one of the first things I would do is to organize a remote sensing project. Get something like ground penetrating radar, or its equivalent, whatever works best in the context of the soils and sediments present in Bur Mararat. Again, an answer which can be brought, which can be gotten from these calls, and organize a remote sensing survey. On the basis of the survey, we should get an idea, A, if structures do exist or not. So we'll have a definite yes or no answer. And B, if they do exist, the extent, how deep in the sediment, and this would help, if not our generation, it will help future generations plan as to what can be done to preserve these sites, but also, and also to study these sites.
At that depth, is it actually possible to get a good idea of what structures, or if there are any structures underneath? Because the silting in Burmarat has been quite considerable, even in these last years. So the depth of, say, the Roman level must be quite far down.
That would have yet to be established. I mean, again, with the C-14s that we're going to be taking, we'll be getting a clear idea. But going by MARSA, the actual structures themselves were between 2 and 3 meters below the sediment. And I believe that the remote sensing, some of the remote sensing equipment which is currently available, does penetrate to 2 to 3 meters. There's a fantastic project at Portos in Rome, and they have been successfully using remote sensing equipment to detect the extent of structures which they are studying.
Well, certainly the kind of work you've been doing as well abroad these last couple of years. I know when I try and contact you, you're usually on a boat stuck in the middle of the Mediterranean somewhere, bobbing up and down, examining some wreck. I think the experience you're getting will hopefully, you know, be able to translate itself into some work here.
There are two different elements to the research that I carry out. However, the exposure to remote sensing equipment that I'm getting from the offshore sector is very much helping me to keep abreast with what becomes available and what is available for remote sensing on land. However, it is through, again, I must reiterate, through the networks that we've formed over the past 5 to 10 years in EU-funded projects. See, before we were members of the EU, the university had been invited to participate as an observer, and then once the country became a fully fledged member, we participated as full partners. The opportunities lie there. We have one floodplain or two floodplains which deserve study with remote sensing equipment, for example. But in places like France and Italy, the market is out there so these research centers have the equipment. It's up to us to make the most of these relationships to try and further our cooperation.
Exactly. So a place like the CNRS in Aix, there you'd get a group of people from various countries, I imagine, coming together with their various expertise. What is the setup like? And the funding? How does it manage to survive a setup like the CNRS?
Well, the CNRS is an acronym for the Centre National de Recherche Scientifique, which is a national institution which employs about 10 to 12,000 researchers. So it covers all areas of the social and physical sciences, and they have a number of laboratories that are dotted throughout the country. So they're very keen to look for international collaborations with overseas colleagues to develop new techniques and further research.
Apart from Paleomed, have you got other projects up your sleeve at the moment? Other plans?
I'm also working on a project in Syria, which builds on my PhD work in the Lebanon. So that's ongoing at the moment.
More harbours, more measuring of harbours.
Yes, exactly. Yes, more harbours.
Well, this is the sort of research centre that obviously we need to be hooked up to, because our situation is we're never going to be able to have, I mean, you know, unlikely that we're going to be able to have the financial resources as a country to support an international research centre like that ourselves. So clearly it's absolutely key that somebody like yourself and the other archaeologists in our Department of Classics and Archaeology are in contact and keep up these contacts. And you, Timmy, your project's up your sleeve, or you're not telling us?
No, this year I'll be returning to Italy to
Ventotene.
To Ventotene, but we also have a project of the Aeolian Islands of Panarea, the island of Panarea, and there should be some exciting news to come out from there, but I can't say more than that at this point in time. But we're also continuing the survey of the Isole Pontine of the island of Ponza. And we're also going to be working off the coast of Campania. But more to come soon.
Well, when I laughingly refer to Dr. Gambin's secrecy, of course, this isn't academic cards close to his chest. That's not the reason why he's secret, but it's the fact that these places could be under threat if the certain news gets out too soon before they've had a chance to be protected. Well, I'd like to thank you both very, very much for coming on Research Matters to talk about your projects. And I'm personally obviously very interested in anything to do with archaeological research. And I'm sure that our listeners will be waiting with bated breath to hear the results. And I hope that when they're published, which I'm sure they will be, at least in the EU project, usually publication is part of the deliverable, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
so
that's
good. So we'll be able to read about your findings. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.